You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, it's the double-headed Dream Team edition. David Shapiro is always in residence. He's from Sasfin Securities. And with him today is Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, both in Johannesburg. Now then, as I was saying to Viv earlier, David, I had a couple of things to do this afternoon. I was out for about 2 hours or so. And when I left, the JSE was down well over 1%. And suddenly it's up well over 1%. Viv, all to do with inflation, isn't it?
Yes. I remember it's the main driver this year has been, besides the Ukraine-Russia thing, towards inflation and the response by central banks of raising interest rates. The Federal Reserve has been the most aggressive by far, and they were set to basically raise rates again come the next quarter, next period. This kind of gives them the excuse that they were basically looking for not to do it as aggressively as they were, and actually maybe even downgrading it if you get a couple more numbers like this. They aren't going to be looking at just a single number, of course, but they'll want to look at a trend. Just to give an idea what came through, we had the overall inflation number at about 7.7. Expected was 7.9. We also saw the core inflation was also lower than expected. And there's some factors here that I think are going to be running for quite some time, especially the medical inflation. The U.S. inflation number is calculated, if you don't mind me getting into a little bit of boring technicality here.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the U.S. inflation number is calculated, and you would never guess how, by looking at the difference between the amount of premiums collected and the amount of money spent by the insurance brokers, basically, the insurance companies. That is kind of like what they're looking at. And those numbers take a long time to calibrate, to get together. And when you do actually have those numbers coming into play, often you have like a year lag on it. So we pretty much know what the number is going to be for the next year for medical inflation in the US. And the surprise, it's actually going to be lower than the previous year. So just based on the change in medical insurance alone, or medical costs inflation, so the medical inflation alone, we're looking at almost a 1% swing from positive to negative based on medical inflation. So everything else equal, that alone would have accounted for 1% drop in inflation over the next year. So that's going to be a headwind to inflation or high inflation for quite some time. And I think that's something that we should be expecting to help us for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's very interesting. David, it used to be the non-farm payrolls number, which is still very important, but that used to be the one that everybody waited for, end of the month, you know, first Friday of the new calendar month. But now it's CPI. 7.7% is still high, but on the other hand, a big fall from 8.2. And what was the peak in American inflation, David? Do you remember? It was over 9%. It might have been.
I'm not sure the exact amount, but I mean, it was closer to 9, I think, maybe 8.9, if I recall.
Yeah.
But I think I think the point is that market was expecting 7.9. We were expecting it. Even reading headlines this morning, you've got a lot of doomsayers out there and a lot of negative people. Mm. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not saying they're wrong for any minute. But I mean, they were all expecting another high reading. So the fact that this came in lower than expected and significantly lower than the market was expecting just sent U.S. markets skyrocketing. And I have never seen anything like this in U.S. markets. We're talking about the U.S. where, just to give you an idea how the markets are responding, because the NASDAQ is over 5.6% higher. Okay, I'm going to repeat
that. Goodness me, that's massive.
It's 5.6% higher. So that's the kind of reaction that it's caused. The S&P is 4%. I remember when the market went up on Friday, I think our market last Friday, 5%. I've never seen a one day like that. And you know, I've seen consecutive days or a week where the markets might have been 5, 6, 7%. But to get a market up like this on one day is quite extraordinary. And there's what happens though, Lindsay, is the short, you get short covering because it starts to trigger reaction. Once you get a move like that, the bears get a little frightened. They come in, start covering, and so on. So a lot of it is driven by that because this market has been enormously short, you know, and very, very strong short positions in the market. So you know, enjoy it while you can. It's lovely to see this thing on the screen, you know, these kind of numbers.
Yeah.
Where the next move is probably the next data point, you know. But just to be a little more optimistic, I think that what this does show, even though there's going to be a lot of bearish comment and worry about it, it's kind of the start of a negative or a deflationary trend. You know, we're starting to see it now gather a bit of momentum, and I think the market's going to like that. And sorry for taking up too much time.
No, you're not. Go
Lindsay,
on.
There on the bonds. This,
I know.
This
is, I'm looking at it now.
10 years down 22 points.
It's down 27 points on my screen to 3.87, 6.5% down. The South African 10-year bond yield in the 1020s. The rand is soaring. The U.S. dollar, euro dollar, like 101.60 or something, whereas it was 97.98 not that long ago, a couple of weeks ago. I wonder if this is the change in it. Viv, you're a long-term investor as well, but you're very studious and also have a sort of a trading leaning as well. Do you think this could be the sort of thing that says that was the day that the market turned? It didn't make a V-shaped recovery, but Viv, do you think that this type of number and this type of market reaction has scared the bears away, potentially?
Hopefully, but we remember this is just one data point. And we are going to get some other things coming to play, especially around gasoline, petrol prices, basically. The reason being is that Biden was pushing real large numbers of extraction, a large withdrawals, rather, from the strategic petroleum reserves, the SPRs. And that's going to end reasonably soon. So the U.S. government is effectively going to be from a net seller of, I think, 5 million barrels a week to whatever net buyer, whatever amount they're talking about. And they also said they're going to basically put a floor on the gas, on the oil prices at around, say, $65 to $70 a barrel of West Texas Intermediary with regards to basically whenever it goes to that point, they're going to start buying to try and replenish the oil that they've taken out. So I think that's one thing. And the next thing, of course, is the European winter. You know, fingers crossed it's a warmish winter, and then we get out of this thing with some stability. But should it be a cold winter, we'll find that the European countries will be forced to direct all the energy towards heating homes as opposed to running factories and other things. And that will obviously cause supply chain issues down the line.
Well, I can tell you something, Viv, that in London tomorrow, the temperature, and that'll be November the 11th, so mid-November. You know, I mean, we're in winter now, 18 degrees tomorrow. And that's across the board. I mean, Barcelona, 21 degrees, Bordeaux, 19 degrees. I watched this thing, and I'm quite disturbed by it. All the birds in my garden are very confused, and all the flowers are very confused as well about what's going on. I don't know. There's some strange things happening. I was going to talk a bit about AVI, David, because I know you've liked the company, etc. Just a quick one. The chairman has a statement talking about prevailing market conditions for consumers. Nothing too dramatic and the share price going up, but it was interesting. There's still a note of caution there in South Africa.
Yeah. Well, look, this is at the AGM. So this is at the annual general meeting. It's not a results presentation.
No.
But he reflects on where things are now. The one thing dragging this company back is I&J. It's been part of AVI for generations. I mean, for a long time. This is I&J, a fish. And, you know, it's just out of line with the rest of their products. This is a superb manufacturer, great brands and everything. But when you've got a very basic commodity like fish, you know, number one, you've got to get the licenses. Number two, you've got to find the right weather. Number three, you've got to put diesel in these little boats that go out. So there are a lot of issues around it. Then you can't find the fish, you know, and things like that. So it's always been one of the areas that has either pushed it up because maybe prices are up or pulled it down. So it's our everybody's wish that they would actually unbundle it and concentrate on what is a very good array of brands, which for strange reasons, you've got fish and you've got shoes.
Fish and shoes, yeah, exactly. Fish and shoes. I never understood it. And what was the CEO who made it all work? I mean, it seems the most implausible portfolio. Yeah. What was his name? He was very, very good. And you always admired him, but you've obviously forgotten.
Simon Crutchley?
That's him, yes.
Was it Crutchley?
Exactly right. Might still be. I don't think so. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. MultiChoice, just quickly stay with you, David. MultiChoice, they came out with their results for the period ended, their interims, to the end of September. Share price up 2.75%. We know the story there. There's a put option in place.
Sure. Look, it's still a troubled company. I mean, there's still issues. I haven't looked at it for a long time, to be honest. It's content, and it's the cost of that content, and it's also trying to it's trying to get viewers, and you've got to get the right kind of bundles. But I've got to go through that in a little more detail. So sorry to sidestep it like that, but I haven't got any great feel for it. Affinity to it.
Yeah.
But I like to go through results, and I like to see what's happening in markets when I've got time. Unfortunately, I had one. I had a funeral today, sadly.
Oh, not no. I'm
an old
sorry,
lady,
David.
A lovely old lady.
Yeah.
So it just it's people get old, and sadly, this lady she had a very full life. Wonderful old woman. She was playing bowls up to a week ago, even though she had cancer. So. You know, it just occupied by a couple of hours.
No need to apologize about not looking at MultiChoice. Trust me on that one. We have to talk about a couple of international things that have caught everyone's attention. I am looking at Bitcoin now at 17,827, up 1%. So it's reversed, like most other risk assets have reversed to the upside today. But Viv, cryptocurrencies, I'm like David in this regard. He knows more about it than me, but he doesn't know enough about it to be confident enough to say, okay, yeah, I like this story. I like this other currency, even though it's fallen 75% in almost exactly a year. But I don't understand it, so I leave it alone. All I know is that people have been ripped off over the years with this thing because of unscrupulous operators. And when you see a platform not going in for another platform and an unregulated market, I just think that any rally should be sold into. Viv, are you a crypto fan?
I'm not actually. The reason being is quite simple. The lack of regulation around the industry has made a lot of scamsters. I mean, you David, you know, you go to a normal financial presentation, the kind of people there are boring, you know, accountant types. The kind of people you see at kind of crypto things are more like flashy hustler kind of people. And they often are salespeople that are selling things they don't understand properly. The whole, you know, thing about NFTs and the whole thing about, these initial coin offerings and so on, they were ridiculous. I mean, I heard a story for Valerie Buterin. He's basically the guy that invented Ethereum, right? And he says he keeps on being given all these coins for free, and not like a small amount, like billions of nominal value, just being given to him for free. Why? Because they can see if he's Vitaly owns these particular coins, then he's aura of respectability goes to the rest of the coins and they become valuable. Elon Musk makes a joke about dogs, a Dogecoin, and suddenly that's worth billions. I mean, when things are working like this, it's pretty obvious it's a bubble. It doesn't take a genius to realize that.
No, you're absolutely right.
You know what? The one thing about the JSE, and I have the same fear about alternative, the other stock exchanges in South Africa, and I don't want to be seen as being a prophet of doom or cautious in that. But the one thing about the JSE, it's been in existence since 1887. And you know that if you buy something there, the stock exchange will guarantee delivery.
Yes.
If you buy it through the JSE, and likewise most global markets, you know that you're going to get delivery. What's brought the market down at the moment, this particularly Brad, what's his name? Fried, or whatever his name is, was a supposed.
Yeah, something with Fried.
Yeah. So he was supposedly worth, $15 billion. 2 weeks ago. He's worth nothing now if this thing goes insolvent.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that there's no liquidity in that market. And for a market to function, for a platform to function, you have to have liquidity. In other words, when a person sells, you want to be able to sell. And when you want to buy, you want to be able to buy. And obviously, they've been caught in the middle with in a liquidity squeeze. And one day we'll go through, you know, what this actually means or how stock exchange functions. You know, there could be – you remember last year with Robin Hood, there was a mismatch between settlements which nearly blew them.
Yeah.
You know, so by the time, you know, you might sell something, but by the time you collect the money, you've got to pay the seller, and then by the time you collect the money from the buyer, you're in trouble.
And so, they're highly regulated as well, David, and you bemoan the fact that you have to do so many things in order to open an account. But in this case, actually, it's a very good thing. So the JSC is very, very has very strong links with the London Stock Exchange, the FTSE, and is, as you say, it's an august institution since the late 19th century. Who guarantees the trade, though? Let's say that something went wrong. Is it the clearinghouse, as it would be in the futures market, or is it the is it an insurance company? Do they have a special insurance spread amongst all the big houses? How does it work, David?
All of the above. All of the above. In other words, you've got policies that you know, that cover you. You have to put up guarantees, and they monitor your financial position extensively.
Right.
So they're constantly looking at your trading situations, and if positions get out of hand, they're onto you straight away. So it's like a banking institution. You know, the bank. One of the things about the South African banking institutions, our financial institutions, they have been incredibly strict, you know, in observing or monitoring banks. So I think you feel secure when you've got an organization like that behind it. And credit to our stock exchange. You know, I can't fault them on that, in that respect. And that's why I'm always worried about some of these CD brokers and, you know, chaps on the peripheral or just chaps on the fringe. Stay away, you know, just, you know, because the advertising is easier, but you've got to understand that they've got to guarantee when you buy something, they've got to make sure that you actually get it. And that applies to like over the, I'm going on a bit here, but that applies to like over the counter deals as well. There's no guarantee that the person from whom you bought will actually deliver. So I only go through a recognized exchange. I would only do deals through a recognized exchange.
Correct.
For clients. You know?
Okay, yes, good advice. Okay, I'm going to have a look at some prices now, which are very, very different to where they were 3 hours ago. Let me tell you, the dollar rand is 17.46. The British pound against the rand is 20.34. Euro rand is 17.71. Euro dollar 101.45. British pound has vaulted its way to 116.50 against the US dollar. That's the cable. We'll come to the international indices in a moment with whichever one of you has the best screen. But the gold price is doing quite nicely, thank you. 17.47, up a couple of dollars. A couple of percent. Platinum up $67 or nearly 7% to $1047 an ounce, and palladium up 3.7% or $69 to $1925. So all commodities suddenly loving the weaker US dollar, which they haven't seen for quite a while. Even oil is up a little bit here, $86.33, up 0.6%. Brent crude, that's the West Texas. Brent crude is $93.25, which is up 0.2%. Natural gas prices up 2.5%, copper up 3.25%, silver up 3.5%. What else? They're closed at the moment, but tomorrow, coal and steel and iron ore. So we'll have a look at those in the morning. But undoubtedly, if the dollar stays where it is, they'll do well when Far East trading opens. The US 10-year Treasury bond yield, gosh, it was in the 420s in the last seven trading days. It's now 3.85%. The South African 10-year, startling performance as well, 22 basis points lower to 10.28%. And the Bitcoin price, having been below 16,000 36 hours ago, is currently 17,694, up very slightly in the last 24 hours. 17,746 now, actually, up 0.5%. Okay, so that's pretty good stuff. Now, I want to talk to you about one more thing as well. And David, I don't know if you know Viv, but David is an accomplished artist or a caricaturist. He sketches beautifully. And also he collects art. Now, you talk about NFTs and you talk about these alternative investments like cryptocurrencies. Did you see the auction of Paul Allen, the ex-Microsoft man? Did you see his Sotheby's art sale last night in New York?
Yeah.
I was staggering.
I know. It is staggering. And you know, you've got to be mega, mega wealthy to afford those kind of prices. And I mean, the fact that they actually went on auction and they went at those levels is something. What did he raise? $1.5 billion.
Over $1 billion, and I think he's got more to sell tonight. Actually, I don't think they could get it through. But what is interesting is that where did he put them all? I remember when he left Microsoft to resign or something. He bought a super yacht and he mucked about on that. But he's had dozens and dozens of pieces, and not just $100,000 pieces. One, I think they broke the record for a Van Gogh, something like $117 million. Yeah. There was another one for $150. It was quite remarkable. And the sad thing is, sorry, Viv, to go on about the art theme here, but David loves art, is that the museums can't afford those sort of sums of money. So it's gone to private collectors, and they will take them away. Because one thing that Paul Allen did was he was very willing to lend them to museums for a particular exhibition or something, obviously get them back afterwards and bung them in the vault. But the new private buyers are just going to keep them and just look at them or keep them in a vault or something. So it's a bit sad.
There are tax issues around it. There are tax issues around all of these. And maybe, he might have massive capital, not capital gains, estate duties due and so on, and one sells them. But if you go around the U.S. and you go into some of the major museums, a lot of the collections in those museums have been donated by very wealthy people, and I think because of that they got massive tax benefits.
Okay.
So that's why you'll see the Hovermeyers, the Stearns, and people like I've forgotten the name, but I mean there are a lot of the Guggenheims and people like that. Some massive collections, donations there to get some kind of tax relief. Etc. But I mean, this might have been as a result of that the family didn't want to keep them and selling them off to pay some dues or whatever. Who knows the private the private issues around this. But I mean, these are big numbers, and I mean these are beautiful pieces that he had accumulated, but I'm afraid that's beyond my pocket,
both Viv and I weren't suggesting that you had a $150 million for a Cezanne or something like that. No, anyway.
But the one was the Surette.
Oh, yes.
He was an impressionist, a young impressionist, died at a very young age. He did those dots, lots of little dots on that. And I think that was one of the prime pieces that went on show. That's a very small painting, but beautiful. Anyway.
A beautiful day in the JSC. Viv, we've been boring on about art. Was there anything else that caught your eye since we spoke on Tuesday? Any little theme that you've identified for yourself?
Just a word on the art stuff here. A lot of stuff comes from Asia, especially from China. And the reason being is, of course, you will need to have some way easily storable to get your wealth, out of China or to have some assets out of China. That's why we had that property boom in London. That's why we had the property boom in places like Toronto. It's because these Chinese billionaires, including some guys from the Middle East as well, if you remember what happened when MBS took over Saudi Arabia, you don't want to have all your money in these home countries when things get a bit dodgy. Yeah, but what caught my eye was the Facebook story.
Yeah.
Last time we talked about it, they announced 11,000 layoffs. But do you understand how much Facebook has been growing, or Meta has been growing? The 11,000 layoffs doesn't even get them back to where they were at the end of last year in terms of numbers.
Yeah.
They're still a couple thousand ahead of where they were at the end of last year in terms of total numbers. And they're not the only ones. I think we are seeing a big turnaround with regards to, this whole tech sector. If Elon Musk gets this whole Twitter thing right, and by cutting 50% of the staff, I wouldn't be surprised if you see something similar happen in places like Facebook, at Google, because these places have been such money-generating machines. They've been attracting all this talent from around the world. And in one way, it's negative for these people. But in another way, we've had some of the smartest minds in the world figuring out how to make you click a button. Not building airplanes, not building, new technology, not doing whatever. Because what Google, Microsoft, Facebook have been doing for the last decade or so, because they have so much money, Amazon as well, and Apple, is they've gone out and hired all the smartest kids from university and said, I'll figure out a way to do something with them sometime in the future. But let's just hire them. We have the money. Let's just pay them a fortune and let them come sit here. And they've basically been stagnating, trying to, like I said, you know, farm clicks or whatever, as opposed to actually being the brains out there in the world. And hopefully right now we can see these 11,000 return to the workforce, a new kind of horizon for, you know, tech in the world, because all these brains now can have better things to do than get you to basically click on Facebook's icons.
I saw an interview on an American television channel, business channel, and this chap said, there's been no new products launched from big tech. The only thing that's new is the metaverse, and no one understands the metaverse. And unfortunately, it's not going to be something that you normal people use every day. Zuckerberg probably will, because he's got nothing else to do apart from watch his wealth go up 10 billion here and down 20 billion there. So I think that he's miscalculated. And again, I'm speaking from a position of ignorance, because I don't know and I don't understand what the metaverse is. But on the other hand, you've got to look at these big tech stocks in terms of defensive qualities, David. Google's defensive because you use it every day. iPhone, because I use it every day. Amazon, because I use it every day. Okay, it suffered horribly. But on the other hand, I look at the things that I use and I understand, and I would definitely have Facebook right at the bottom. And I'm not paying for Twitter, and we've had this conversation on Tuesday. I'm not going to pay for Twitter.
Lindsay, I think Viv's point is what I think will happen is I think these companies, as we were discussing the other day, have come under enormous criticism from the media, from government, and so on. And they have been a bit profligate with their funds, hiring people, hoping that these chaps would sit down at their desk or these puffy chairs or what beanbag chairs and come up with some genius invention or something. But I think they're going to cut back now. I think in this kind of market, I think they'll cut back on costs, and they can do that pretty easily. And you'll get that falling to the bottom line, you know, even on their present day business models. These are gigantic companies and big, big cash generators. So they've come down quite dramatically in terms of their pricing, in terms of PEs and that. And just watch out for them. I just got someone said, you know, asked me about, I've invested in tech, in big tech, but I'm not fully, what I mean by that is not everything that I own is, or our clients own is tech, you know. I've been moderate in it and covering the big ones only. But I wouldn't chuck them out. I wouldn't ignore what they can turn around, you know, if they do focus on getting efficiencies and cutting costs.
Okay, so stick with them, but be selective. Sorry, Viv, go ahead.
I just want to give you like an idea. Facebook, for instance, right, can turn around on a dime if Zuckerberg just cut out the metaverse, because there's such a huge money generator there, and it's been growing so well in terms of the numbers of people. So Facebook, all it just requires is a decision by Zuckerberg to change that metaverse and not even totally ignore it. Spend pretty much what the iPhone took to create, which was about $3 or $4 billion every year on it, and it's fine. People would ignore that. But if you looked at what he was saying in that last statement that came out from Meta about how much he planned to spend on the metaverse, people were coming out with assumptions that he was going to spend more on the metaverse than the Apollo space program. No, I'm not even joking. For the next decade, right, the projection of what they put in there, if you just basically follow those numbers through, was equivalent to putting a person on the moon. It was 10 or 12 times more than basically what it cost to create Boeing's Dreamliner. It would have been the largest private R&D project in history. The only thing rivaling it would have been the Apollo space program. And that is why the market looks so negative at it. And if he could just basically cut that down to a point where, like I said, he's spending $3-4 billion a year, people would ignore it. It would be nothing, because such a massive money generating machine behind Facebook that you would say, okay, go for it. But the numbers that he's putting through, and look, with regards to the metaverse, I know what he's saying. He's saying, if you imagine what the perfect interface is going to be, it's going to be virtual reality. It's been the stuff of science fiction for generations. You know what I mean? It's like flight was the stuff of science fiction for generations until people finally did it. We don't know whether or not he's right. If he is right, it's going to be a massive boom, because he'll have the VR technology that everyone's going to be spending half their lives basically sitting and watching screens on. You know, I've seen stuff out there within the range of the very wealthy upper middle class that we see. You know, like a few hundred thousand rods, where you could actually have what is almost a satisfying experience. But the problem is it at a point now that's going to be developed in like the next 5 years, or is it going to be another 50 to 20 years? Mm-hmm. If it's 5 years, he's betting right. If it's 20 years, he's betting wrong. But, you know, it is a bet that he's making. But I think Lindsay is right. He's bored. Every other one of these tech guys, think with Bezos, the Sergey Brin and Larry Page, all of these guys have basically left their companies, taken their money, bought an island somewhere, gone to space, you know, that kind of stuff, divorced their wives. You know, you see the trends around there. Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, to a certain extent, is the only one. And even Elon Musk hasn't basically stayed with his actual thing. He's not doing Tesla that much anymore. SpaceX is kind of running on its own. Zuckerberg is the only kind of guy that's still focused primarily on his, you know, company. And I think to a certain extent, you have those tens of billions, you know, rather try to do something interesting with your life. And this is what he's trying to do. Unfortunately, he's trying to do it with invested money. That's the problem.
And David, the extent of my knowledge of technology, because I am a Luddite and becoming more of a Luddite as I get older, I want to sit down in front of a nice big screen TV with some good speakers and watch a football match. I want to watch the World Cup. Somebody, because eventually people will never sleep. Eventually the medical profession will say, well, you've got the metaverse now. Why do you need to sleep? You've got a drip in your hand. You don't cook a meal anymore. And you watch eventually you become an automaton.
You could be on the sideline instead of watching, sitting back on a couch.
Yeah.
You could actually be on the field and watch players around you. Well, I know, that's the metaverse.
Someone will kick me.
Project yourself there. No, yeah, you know, they'll pass the ball to you as well. Yeah.
So. I'm sorry. It's too much of me.
You can see videos online. The metaverse, that those glasses are so powerful, right? That if you put them on and they show you fall, your legs will buckle because it actually confuses your brain so much. It'll override your own sense of balance and you'll fall over.
I fall over without those things anyway.
Amazing. Yeah.
Okay, and just one more thing.
Lindsay,
you mentioned.
I've got to tell you something here.
Please do.
Sorry, go.
No, go. You go.
I have to mention this. Amazon is up at the moment 9.9% today.
That's big. Let's call it 10.
Call it 10. I'm just trying to think of others that we – Alphabet up 7%.
Brilliant.
That's the kind of moves we're getting, 6.5% on Microsoft. So there's Apple up 6%. There's huge gains taking place at the moment. So, I think a lot of this is short covering. I don't think this is opening up any kind of new positions.
Good.
Because I doubt whether the people that I've been listening to for the last 6 months who have been so negative on the market and are still cautious, and correctly so, I'm not criticizing them. I don't think they've put orders on. So this is very technical or very trader orientated.
I think you're quite right.
Massive gain. I haven't seen this. You know, I just have to savor this.
It's still 5 hours to go as well. So what you see now on your screen may be very, very different once all that short covering has been done. Just one more thing before we come to the indices, the JSE indices. Mm. You were talking about Jeff Bezos, you know, and multi-billionaires being a little bit bored. He ordered a yacht. You've probably heard about it. It's obviously a motor yacht, but it's a proper old school sailing boat. It's got three huge masts. It's cost $500 million. It's being built just down the road from me, in a Dutch shipyard. They're very, very good at building yachts, these people. And what they did was they worked it out. I mean, after a little while, they thought, the only way we can get it out to sea is to take it through Rotterdam, along the Maas River, and then off it goes. Unfortunately, the masts are so high, there's a very historic bridge, a green iron bridge in Rotterdam that was quite historic during the war, and it's a national monument. And so Bezos says, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. You dismantle it, and then once the yacht has gone through, I'll put it back up again. And they initially said, yeah, that's fine. And then there was these heritage societies saying, no, you won't do that. So it's stuck now. It's stuck in the shipyard. So they're going to have to dismantle it themselves, put the masts on another boat and go on, and then go somewhere else and stick them back up again. It's massive. It was supposed to be on the sea now in July,
can't
August.
Can't they think of this before? I can't believe they don't think of this before.
Well.
I mean, these people are geniuses in terms of designing something. I mean, can you imagine the electronics in something like this? Or if it's not, and they can't get it under a bridge.
No. Didn't think of
Seriously.
It. Seriously. No. Okay.
You think that's bad?
Yeah.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Do you know he spent $42 million building a clock?
A what?
A clock.
A clock.
A clock.
So he's built a clock for $42 million.
Why?
So because the clock is meant to last 10,000 years. He's built a 10,000 year clock.
That's useful.
Right? For $42 million. So I'm just saying, that's what you have. That's what happens when you have too much money to spend. At least his ex-wife is actually giving it away to charity. So she's basically donated like multiples what he's actually donated to charity over the since he's been divorced.
Mackenzie, and she
Mackenzie. So she's actually trying to do something with the money, but he's spending it on basically the stuff you'd ask a five-year-old. What do you want? The biggest boat in the world. Go to space. A gigantic clock.
Exactly. Oh, dear. It's very funny. Yeah, what a corrupting commodity money is if you have too much of it. Okay. Yeah. Viv, please give us the closing JSE indices, and then David, you'll come in with the trading volume on the JSE. But Viv, you go first, please.
So I don't have that in front of me. Could David do that?
Oh, yeah, of course you can.
We got very early gains in the US market. So we were up 1.5%. Gains right across the board. Very, very big gains there. The resource index up 1.6%. I'm trying to think, wherever we went, the financials up 1.7%. Banks up 1.3%. And consumer discretionary or the industrials up about 1.9%, you know, lifted by most stocks. But it'll probably pick up. The best performers today were Naspers up 4.5%. Obviously, that strong rand also acted as a little bit of a dampener.
Yeah.
So I think we'll probably get the bulk of the gains tomorrow morning if the U.S. markets hold. I think we'll see a much better opening here and stronger, you know, stronger day tomorrow.
Okay.
And let's point out one thing, though. Just one thing. Tangela, which has been one of the big leaders on our market, has been in a bit of a downturn and coming under pressure, you know, I think on concerns about falling coal prices. It was down another 5% today.
That's quite a lot,
and
isn't it?
It's just one that it's just one. I don't want to discuss it because we're running out of time, but I mean it's hard to try and forecast because what is causing the selling, because I think even at these coal prices they're going to be making a lot of money, so there's either someone big is getting out and just continues to sell, or there might be another story around it. But in the markets that have been pretty tight, Tangela has been giving back some of the big gains that it's made this year.
Very good. David, what was the value traded on the JSE today, please?
Value traded, $24 billion, with Naspers, 7.5. Goldfields has been a big story as well. You know, I think a huge sigh of relief that this deal is over. But I feel sorry for Chris Griffith because he's got to do something. He's a very ambitious man, but it made up about 7.4% of the market today.
Don't feel sorry for him because yesterday it was up over 21%. 300 million Yamana is paying for some breakout fee or something else. I think he's probably he's completely relieved that he hasn't got this millstone around his neck. But so that's fine. And who wants to give me the live Wall Street, please? Anyone?
I'll give it to you. I'll give you what. Go, Viv.
The S&P 500 is currently up just about 4%, 3.92%. The Nasdaq, as David mentioned, has obviously gone up higher, and that's just because of the fact that, you know, the tech stocks, the growth companies, have been hit by more. So they're up about 5.2% at the moment, and so I think that's obviously indicative of just how far they've fallen, that they're bouncing back. And the Dow is the lowest riser, let me say, just about 2.5% higher, up at 323 at the moment.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for an entertaining and informative chat. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities and Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss, both in Johannesburg. And the three of us will be together the week after next. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.